This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Brian Koberger.
Let's talk about what no one else really wants to talk about. What happened behind the scenes in the Brian Koberger plea deal? Yeah. And why? After 2.5 years of legal buildup, evidence dumps, media frenzy, and victim family agony, we suddenly pulled the plug on the trial. And more importantly, what that silence actually cost. Was this always the destination, or did everyone just give up the map and start winging it? Because here's the thing. When you zoom out, this whole plea deal looks a lot less like a calculated resolution and more like a last-minute surrender to a system that ran out of stamina. For the families, it was a gut punch. No trial, no real answers, no shot at seeing the man who killed their kids held publicly accountable in the full light of justice and eventually a bullet to his heart. And for Koberger, it was a win. No death penalty, no public dissension, no public dissection of his failures, pathology, or planning. Just a straight line to life behind bars where he gets to control the narrative. But the legal mechanics behind how we got there, those matter. So I brought in someone who understands the inside of this, defense attorney Bob Mata. He sat in the seat Ann Taylor's in now. He knows what gets said in those client meetings and how the prosecution evaluates risk behind closed doors and what it means when a plea this big comes this late. He's not here to speculate. He's here to tell you how it works and what it means for everyone left picking up the pieces. I want to hear your thoughts in the comments section on YouTube. If you're not there already, search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi so you can join us and you can comment and we'd love to hear it. So please do that and hit subscribe when you get there on YouTube. If you're on the podcast platforms and are listening to us when you're driving or whatever the hell you're doing, press subscribe there too, please, so you don't miss any of us. We get to the ethical lines around what a defense attorney can and can't say when a client admits guilt. We talk about whether Koberger's autism diagnosis actually spooked the state. And we dig into the part that should piss everyone off, the total lack of meaningful consultation with victims' families before this deal went public. Because at the end of the day, those families deserved a seat at the table, not a PDF on a Sunday night. So let's start there. With a $1 million question, if Koberger told Ann Taylor early on that he did it, could she still legally build a defense that named someone else? And that's what I'm trying to understand, like what went on behind the scenes here. Would Ann Taylor have known 2.5 years ago that he did this? I'm not asking for her opinion, but like, could he have said to her 2.5 years ago, I did this and we need to fight this? Could you still then go and fight this as if and name other suspects and things like that? Or if the client says to you, I did this, is that a hard stopping point? And like, now we just got to go to a plea deal. I can't represent you. And I can't certainly name other human beings if you've told me that you're the one who did this.
Yeah, in that particular type of situation, number one, I don't think that Koberger made the admission at that point in time. I think the more likely scenario is that Ann Taylor had that conversation with Brian that I've been having with you about that case for an awful long time, really since the PCA dropped that sheath, you know, with his DNA. And we're talking about a singular profile on that sheath under the button is fucking smoking gun evidence. Mm-hmm. And there's only so much you can do with it. And she tried to fight it from the suppression angle in terms of the IgG and saying that the way they go, you know, the way that they went about getting it was unconstitutional. Once she lost that, you know, she's having real conversations with her client. Mm-hmm. You know, she's saying, look, they're trying to kill you. Okay. Like, I need you to understand the fact that they're trying to execute you. This isn't like silver tongue magic world.
Yeah.
Like, that is going to be very powerful evidence of your guilt to a jury. That's facts. So I think what it was that the state wasn't willing to budge on it, mm-hmm. you know, but I think that the thing that lay people tend to forget is that it's essentially two different trials.
Yeah.
So you have the initial trial, which is determining guilt or not guilt. Mm-hmm. And then you have the second trial in a death penalty case, which is mitigation and aggravation. And there was some, you know, the fact that he was autistic, you know, diagnosed autistic, and he had some issues. I think had the state worried a little bit in terms of do we continue on with the trial itself, spend millions of dollars additional, give him the opportunity to spend a decade and a half appealing this, torturing the families with that shit, all with the thought in mind that there's a chance that despite the horrific nature of the case, despite the fact that four beautiful kids lost their lives and thousands of people have been devastated because of that, because the reach on that goes far beyond just the immediate mm-hmm. families. It's everyone that came into contact with those people, their life has been changed to varying degrees somewhat by the fact of the loss of those kids. So, you know, when you take that kind of that depth of loss into consideration and you're thinking about, all right, is it possible that we win, we get the guilty verdict, but that they elect not to give him the death penalty because of the mitigating factors? I think that was a real consideration for them, because like it's just one of those things where ultimately, you know, you see it in cases where you're sometimes surprised when certain defendants are not given the death penalty, where you're thinking it's a no brainer. And I think that they looked at all those different things, and then ultimately the prosecutors decided. And I think Ann went to Koberger and said, look, you know, I'm going to ask you this flat out. Do you think that I should go ask them if they'll take death off the table? Mm-hmm. And I think as trial closes in, Tony, you know, defendants become a lot more pragmatic in terms of the reality of the situation. Like Koberger's a psychopath, mm-hmm. but he's not an idiot. You know, I mean, the dude's got a pretty high education level. Yeah. He has an understanding of the process. He has an understanding of what the evidence was. And, you know, when it boils down to, is he going to try to preserve his own life when he had zero remorse, apparently, mm-hmm. for taking four other lives? I mean, it just shows what a selfish fuck he is, and a complete sociopath and psychopath. He's all the paths.
Yeah.
You know, and I think when she went to him and said, look, you know, do you want me to go ask him if they'll take the death penalty off the table? And he must have said yes. So she went to him late in the game, 11th hour, and you know, asked him if they'll take the death penalty off the table. And then prosecution team obviously had discussions internally, and they looked at the strength of the case. Because I don't think that there's any part of them that thought they were going to lose that trial. Mm-hmm. Because of the strength of the evidence, and despite what all the Probergers are saying and their conspiracy shit,
yeah,
I'm telling you flat out, I've said it from the beginning, and I'll die on that hill. It was incredibly powerful evidence.
Yeah,
like I had little to no doubt. Obviously, pending trial, obviously seeing them vet all the evidence at trial had to occur in order for me to be 100% certain that it was him, but that thing leaned guilty from the minute that I saw it. I thought yeah. the cops did a great job on that. I thought they got the right guy. And I think that we should all be thankful for the fact that they got him off the streets. Because if you have any kind of misconception that this guy wouldn't have done it again, yeah. you're dreaming. Yeah. This guy was just getting started. Had he not forgotten that sheath there or lost it or not been aware that he left it, we might be dealing with a very, very different scenario here, man. I don't know that they would have gotten him.
Yeah.
I don't know that they would have caught him.
Yeah.
You know, maybe with the car thing, but it would like without that sheath, if you subtract that sheath, then you're left with blurry images of a vehicle that looks to be potentially his car, but that's it. And yeah. bushy eyebrows. Like that's kind of the heart of your evidence. That sheath was everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think he probably said, you know what? Yeah, I asked him. And then, you know, they, like I said, they talked about it. And they said, you know what, let's make the offer. And because there are huge benefits to it. There just are. And it's I understand how Steve Gonsalves is incredibly upset. I would be yeah. too.
Let's
you know,
talk,
I don't know what I'd do if yeah. somebody did that with one of my kids. I'd be of the mindset that I'm going to try to, if there was a way for me not to get to cause more trauma to my family, if mm-hmm. I could handle this shit on my own,
yeah.
I would. Because yeah. that's how I feel about my kids. You know, I would take a bullet for my kids without blinking an eye.
Yeah.
And that's how Steve Gonsalves feels. And he felt that they didn't talk to them enough. They didn't go through the process with them, which is shitty.
Let's talk about that for a second. I mean, this is obviously this case specifically. There's many cases where the DA has to go to a family and say, look, here's what we're looking at. And I know a lot of times it's, what do you think? What's your consideration? We want to hear your thoughts on this. The fact that the way Steve described it as basically we got an email with a PDF that said, hey, read here. It was a little more contextual than that, but it wasn't a sit down. Let's weigh all this. It was, here's what we're doing. Right. Deal with it. Was that normal? I mean, is that just how this goes? Or does Steve have a really big point here that you really should have spent more time with us on this before saying we're going to accept your plea?
Well, I mean, ultimately, that final call is 100% in the purview of the prosecution. So they don't need to go to the families.
Sure.
In terms of, it's not a requirement on a strictly legal level. Yeah. In terms of a human being level, it's an absolute requirement in my world. Yeah. I don't know how you move forward on anything like this without heavily consulting the families, to not only consult with them, but to inform them of the realities of the legal system and how this thing looks in the event of a guilty verdict and the process that follows that for decades, and because I hazard to guess that when Steve Gonsalves gets over his initial rage, which is completely and totally warranted, that as this progresses through the years, and as much as that gaping wound can heal, which is never fully, ever, you're never healing from that ever, that he's gonna come to the conclusion, well, at least this piece of shit admitted it. At least that's not a question anymore in my mind. And I've been spared the nightmare of having to go through the appellate process for two decades. And I hope that gives him some solace, because he deserves that. Mm-hmm. So, but in terms of, is it normal? I've just seen it from my side of it, and we have very different roles in the system, prosecutors and defense attorneys.
Yeah.
I deal with the defendant and their families in the aftermath of, what it feels like to be a family member of an alleged perpetrator or a convicted perpetrator who's done the unimaginable, and what that does and how that impacts the families of that person is devastating. I say it all the time. They're victims as well.
Oh yeah.
In a massively different way, but victims nonetheless. It destroys their families. They're everything that they've built, whether it's generational, whether it's in this life, it doesn't matter. Everything that they've known is destroyed by the actions of if it's their child. And it's, so like I see that side of it, but I also see the other side of it from afar, wherein I see these victims' families that unless they get an exceptional prosecutor who really, really takes it upon themselves to keep these families informed for decades, because prosecutors move on, they leave the office, they go into private practice, whatever they do, and they move on to all their other cases. But a lot of times those victims' families get left behind. And when appeals are filed down the road, these families are not informed. What does this mean?
Yeah.
They're not getting the call saying, hey, I just want to give you a heads up. Let's go through this appeal. I want to tell you whether or not I think it has legs, whether it's total bullshit, whether it's just pro forma being filed because that's what you do. Or if it's something that you should be concerned about, like those conversations just don't take place as much as they should. And so these families are left wondering and worrying and, fraught with anxiety, because this thing has now reared its ugly head again in what you thought and you hoped was over, and it's not, So I just wish that they would have sat down and had a real conversation, especially in a case that just, like, you can't escape the high profile nature of this case. I mean, people are going to talk about this case for years to come.
There's something about hearing this from a defense attorney, someone who's actually built cases like this, that makes this whole thing hit differently. Bob Mata didn't sugarcoat it. He laid it out plainly. If Koberger admitted guilt at any point and Ann Taylor knew, the game shifts. It becomes about saving his life, not proving innocence, and that's exactly what we saw play out. And she did her job. But here's the part that should stick with all of us. This deal didn't have to go down like this. The state could have extended it earlier. The families could have been consulted earlier. The process could have honored their pain instead of sidelining it. But instead, what they got was secrecy, silence, and a decision that felt more like damage control than justice. And look, Bob's absolutely right. The sheath was the case. It was the linchpin, the smoking gun, the one piece of evidence that, had it not existed, we might still be in the dark. But it did exist, it was found, and it matched Koberger's DNA. So why wait so long to offer this deal? Why drag everyone through legal hell for years if this was always going to be the ending? There's no satisfying answer, not for the families, not for the public, and honestly, not for the justice system either. Because every time we do this, every time we move a case like this behind closed doors, we reinforce the idea that process matters more than people. That avoiding a lengthy trial is somehow more important than showing the world what justice looks like in daylight. And we can't ignore the fact that Koberger still got to control the outcome. He gets to avoid execution. He gets to keep his secrets. He gets studied, quoted, maybe even published. Meanwhile, the people who lost everything are expected just to accept it. Move on and be grateful they didn't have to sit through appeals for the next 20 years. So where does that leave us? With a win, technically, but it's one that tastes like ash. Justice was served, but only to the man who took everything. For the rest of us, all we've got is a plea, a confession, and a long list of questions that still don't have answers. Tell me what you think in the comments section on YouTube. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Brewski. And you'll find us if you're listening on the podcast platforms, on Apple Podcasts or wherever it may be. Hit subscribe there so you don't miss any of our coverage on this case and all of them that we cover for you right here. The Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. I'm Tony Brewski. We'll talk again real soon.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In The News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.